Hey everyone, welcome back. It's another FaceTime interview. This time we get to talk to ESPN insider Field Yates. Going to be a lot of fun. Field, great knowledge of the NFL, and he shares it with fans on ESPN, the insider pages. He's a fantasy football guy too, so we have a lot to get to with Field, and we're looking forward to it. Thanks a lot, man, for giving us some of your time. We appreciate it.
No problem at all, and it's good to have football around the corner, or at least close to having it around the corner with camp starting up this week and then next week as well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You've been with two NFL teams. Football has been in your blood your whole life, so your body clock is telling you it's time to work, right?
Listen, people always say that August is one of the best months of summer. I didn't even know that August was a month of summer until like a week and a half ago when someone told me. August is football season. August is training camp season for me.
Yeah. I mean, and you're working with ESPN now, but just reading up and catching up on you before we were going to chat, I saw that you were with the Chiefs and the Patriots. So tell us a little bit about what you were doing with those two teams and what that was like.
Yeah, so the Patriots was the first stop along the way, and that involved what I would say is best described as an internship because there's really not another word for it, but it was sort of scouting and coaching, entry level. And it was learning how to, I always say, sort of speak football and then sort of figuring out, okay, we know, for example, you know, Randy Moss is one of the greatest wide receivers of all time. Most people can tell he can run fast, but what else is there? What are the nuances of his game that a coach or a general manager is going to evaluate and say, this is what makes Randy Moss, you know, perhaps the most talented wide receiver over the past 20 years or so?
Yeah. So now you're doing TV and you're writing, and, you know, a lot of times, especially in TV, they want bite-sized, supercharged bits, but you're used to writing reports on players and being very thorough. So what's that like for you now where you got to keep it short but still be really good?
Yeah, I'd say that what I learned, and so I guess I failed to finish out the second part of the equation with the Chiefs, which is after I graduated from college, I went and worked in their scouting department and then briefly in the coaching department as well. And you're right, especially in scouting, you know, people always wonder why we see or read some of these at times unkind and at times peculiar descriptions of players during the pre-draft process about things that you say to yourself, how does that relate to football? And it's not that anonymous scouts are evaluating those traits necessarily as primary ingredients in the evaluation. It's that when you're a scout and you're on the road or you're an in-house scout or wherever you are, your job when you present a player evaluation to a general manager or a head coach is to have every single stone unturned. Mm-hmm. And not just the obvious ones, the ones that no one is thinking about. So in terms of how that translates to television is – usually in my mind, whatever question I'm asked, I might have five tentacles of information that I want to get to related to that topic. But I know that I have to prioritize them because the reality is one, maybe two of them will actually make it to air. So it's almost like every time you're asked a question, you have what would be your ideal answer, which is, you know, the couple minute description of five different points, versus the perfect answer, which is whatever the most important point you want to get out is, you have to have that right on the top of your cranium and be ready to spit it out and move on to the next question.
Yeah. All right, well, let's talk Vikings. What's speaking top of your cranium, what's top of your mind when you think about the Vikings? Because you have your eye on all 32 teams. And so, you know, you got a lot's going on in there. But when you think about the purple, what are you thinking about?
Yeah, I'd say it's about the assimilation of new pieces on offense, and it's not just drafted players. Dalvin Cook obviously being a popular topic of conversation, I'd imagine, right now. Second-round pick, which normally comes with some level of expectation. Then you factor in that, Adrian Peterson is now a New Orleans Saint, and Latavius Murray has the ankle surgery, which I know the team is optimistic he'll be ready for week one. But still, until you see it, right, there's always an element of, you know, wanting to budget a tiny bit of wiggle room. But it's also, you know, the free agent offensive line pickups. You know, Mike Remmers returns to Minnesota, a player that obviously is very familiar to the organization, but, you know, is now anchoring a right side spot and expect it to not just be, a good player, but a very good player for the money he was paid. And also Riley Reiff, a player that's probably familiar to the organization as well because he played for the Lions for all that time during his rookie contract. You know, you notice the trend around the NFL. It's pretty rare for teams now to fill their top offensive line priorities to the draft because there are so few ready-made starters in the NFL draft now at the offensive line spot because of the way that college football is trending with these spread offenses. So Minnesota, not the only team in the division to do this, spent big to fill, you know, potentially two starting roles for the next three, four, five seasons. So I would say the assimilation of parts, and probably the obvious thing you're keeping an eye on is the quarterback situation. You know, at what point, if at all, do we see Teddy Bridgewater on the field during 2017? And if he is on the field, what does that mean for Sam Bradford? But I'll take it a step further and just say some of the new pieces that are going to be mixed into this offense, which doesn't have to be outstanding for this team to be really good, because the defense, we know, is going to be sturdy week in and week out.
Yeah. You know, with those new pieces on offense, obviously two of them are at the running back position, as you mentioned, Dalvin Cook and Latavius Murray. And, you know, we were talking kind of off air before we started here about first-round picks taking a year or two to assimilate for the Vikings in years past, with Trey Waynes and Laquon Treadwell specifically. But I know Dalvin wasn't a first-round pick. He's a second-round pick. It'll be interesting to see, though, a guy at an impact position like running back, if that trend continues, or if the coaching staff is like, this guy's just so good, we're going to forego that sort of progressive and intentional warming up process, and we're just going to give him a bunch of carries right away. I can't wait to see how that unfolds.
Yeah, and I would say this, and I'm not saying that any position in the NFL is easy to pick up, but the running back spot is an instinct-based position. Find the hole, hit the hole, and then make defenders miss after you've hit the hole. Dalvin Cook certainly did that in spades during his tenure at Florida State. You can make the case for him as the most exciting player in college football to watch last year. You know, he's at least in that group of the Lamar Jackson and perhaps Christian McCaffrey last year and other players of that ilk. So, yeah, I'm with you. And, you know, I think that people probably put a sort of a hover a black cloud over guys that don't make an immediate impact in the first round, like Trey Waynes, like Laquon Treadwell. And certainly you don't want guys, I mean, you want to get maximum potential out of these guys. But the reality is in the NFL, even if you come from a polished program or you come from a long, successful college career, it's a major jump for anybody who has played the game at the NFL level. And sometimes that first year being a slow played year can pay serious dividends in the long term. Mm-hmm. And probably for the Vikings, that was probably part of the thinking, is we may put these guys out there and they can be a deer in the headlights as a rookie and actually set themselves back, or we can wait till they're ready. And when they are ready, we can hope that they can become the players we saw them to be during their college careers.
Yeah. No, and when you look at offensive line, I mean, the Vikings started five different left tackles last year, and I believe it was nine different starting combinations. So you look at Reef and Remmers, and yeah, they might not be household names or perennial all-pros, but they're durable. Those two combined have missed just two games in each of their last two seasons, and they played for the Panthers and the Lions. The Panthers went to the Super Bowl 2 years ago. The Lions made the playoffs last year. So, again, they're not household names, but these are sturdy, reliable, durable players. And given the acrimony we had along the offensive line with injuries, it's such a drastic improvement to me. Am I overselling that, or do you kind of see it that way too?
Well, when an offensive line coach steps into the draft room or during the free agency period, whatever room the personnel staff assimilates in, I'd imagine probably the first trait any offensive line coach says is, I want reliability. I want guys that I know what I'm going to get out of them every single snap. Even like it's almost like you take a guy who is a steady B+ versus a player who has waves of A and waves of C level play. And maybe a guy like Mike Remmers is an example of the steady play, right? There are not too many dominant right tackles. And I'm sure people will say, well, Mike Remmers, you know, looked like he was, you know, he had some struggles with guys like Von Miller. Well, here's a clue for everybody who hasn't been watching. Von Miller makes everybody look like, you know, a junior varsity offensive tackle. So there are going to be stretches for any offensive lineman where they're going to have their tough days. But reliability-wise, I'm sure that Tony Sperano feels like he's got a group that he can count on. He has a much better feel for what he's going to get out of them each and every snap. And, you know, this is basically three out of the five offensive linemen have been paid very good money to be starters there in Minnesota over the past two off seasons. That equation alone gives me more confidence. And the last thing I'd say about the offensive line play is this is not some, you know, drop, 5-7-step drop back, vertical passing offense at its core. We know last year it's about efficiency. It's about quick throws. It's about maybe first reads often for Sam Bradford. I mean, you don't just stumble into an NFL record for completion percentage in a single season.
Yeah. Would you, just thinking about it in theory, I guess, would you give up a few points on the completion percentage that Sam had last year to get a yard or a yard and a half in yards per attempt? Is that the wrong way to think about it? Is that too analytical? But, you know, because he did set an NFL record for completion percentage, but the yards per attempt had to be low because he had to get rid of the ball quickly, right?
Yep, yeah. Yeah, it's almost like, are those binary? I'm not sure, but probably are, right? I mean, the further down the field the throws, the more likely they are to be higher degree of difficulty, et cetera. I would imagine that the answer is yes. Like, if we can boil it down to that equation where the completion percentage drops to 68%, but the yards per attempt goes up to, you know, 7.8 or something like that, then maybe you would be happier. And I would say this is, you know, the team obviously started off really strong last year. It was one of the hottest teams in football out of the gates. The margin for error increases when you have some of those sudden change plays on offense. And you've got some speed. I mean, Stephon Diggs can run with almost any wide receiver in football, right? And Adam Thielen was terrific last year. And Laquon Treadwell could be a much better player in year two. Mm-hmm. You just need some of those plays where even if they aren't designed to go 80 yards, they get you there just because it takes such a load off of the defense, which last year I don't think that defense had a major regression down the stretch last year. I think it was just the wear and tear of needing to be sort of the, you know, carry the team each week probably caught up to them more than anything else.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a six-quarter stretch last season, the entire game against the Colts and then the first half against the Packers where we gave up like 17% of our total points, you know, in the, just those six quarters. So I think you're right. There wasn't a regression. I just think a long season caught up to them and they had six bad quarters. But that's a great transition to our defense, because I want to ask you a couple of things. We're used to Mike Zimmer now, where everyone loves him. They know what his defense is like. I want to get your perspective when you're preparing for a Mike Zimmer defense, or if you're a player looking across the line of scrimmage at a Mike Zimmer defense, what's coming at you?
Well, it's physical. Probably the first word that comes to mind is physical and tough. Even if players don't enter Minnesota as tough, they're going to be tough if they're going to play for Mike Zimmer. Physically tough and mentally tough. It's not a mystery that playing for Mike Zimmer is not easy, right? Mm-hmm. If this is not a country club atmosphere when you go into a defensive meeting room that's led by Mike Zimmer. But you think about the secondary, you've got good, you know, certainly very good talent. I mean, Xavier Rhodes has uncommon length and he's got good speed and he's got a lot of the tools you need naturally, but he also, you know, plays for Mike Zimmer, and I think that helps him be an even better player. Mm-hmm. While you see him, you know, shadowing a guy like Dez Bryant or in a national game last year, for example, or things like that. So I think physically tough, you know, I think along the defensive line, like powerful, you know, like even some of these guys, you know, I think we probably associate the words explosive and quick off the edge for defensive ends that are sort of premium players. Like Everson Griffin, that dude could probably play defensive tackle if needed on a consistent basis. And then I say this often, and maybe it rings more familiar in Minnesota. Maybe this is old news, but I think Danielle Hunter is the best player that nobody talks about in the NFL, or at least the best defensive player. You just don't find guys that are cut like that, 6'6 or 6'5, 250-ish pounds. And, you know, maybe if he was playing a higher percentage of the snaps, or maybe – I don't even know if he's – how many games he's even started because he's part of that three-man rotation. But if he was a 16-game starter, we might be saying to ourselves, like, the list is short of pass rushers that are better than Danielle Hunter in the NFL right now. I mean, it's not many. It may be one hand's worth.
He had 12.5 sacks last season, as you said, playing in that rotation. maybe we'll see him a little bit more as that primary left defensive end. Maybe they even switch him to the right side. You know, you can kick Brian Robinson inside. Yep. And we got kind of a different thing going at D tackle this year with our three technique, because we got Dayton Jones and Will Sutton and Tom Johnson. Like, with Shreve Floyd's injury, there's not like one guy who's playing three technique. It's kind of a rotation and a big collection of guys who can all chip in, you know?
And that's the way the NFL needs to be played right now defensively. I don't want to overthink a recency thing, but the Super Bowl showed us that if you don't have probably between 7 and 9 bodies that you can count on to play along your defensive front, whether you're relying on a 3-man, 4-man, or even a 5-man front, you know, meaning like either three down defensive linemen and 2 edge players, or, you know, 4 down defensive linemen and a strong side linebacker that's walked up, you're going to be in trouble. I mean, the Patriots played, I think, 94 offensive snaps last year in the Super Bowl. Now, that's an outlier. But you need teams. Look at some of the best defenses in football. Seattle, for years now, has always relied upon a rotation of defensive linemen. Now, they've got top-level talent, too, but they've always mixed and matched guys, which has been a big part of their defensive success. And in Minnesota, yeah, sure, it's great when you have a player like Shreve Floyd, who at his apex is a very good player. And obviously, we wish him well in his recovery. But if you're going to have to go with 3 guys or multiple guys to replace him, you know, one of the trickle down impacts could be that you have a level of fresh bodies out there that could pay off in a way that teams that don't have as much of a luxury with that depth won't experience.
All right. Yeah. 2 final questions, Field, before we let you go. And I know you're doing SportsCenter hits and all that stuff today. You're busy. So thank you for your time.
No problem.
From a fantasy football perspective, who's the best Viking to get, factoring in their value in terms of where you might draft them or how much you have to pay for them in an auction? Who's your favorite Viking to have in fantasy football this year?
I think people are probably going to underrate Adam Thielen again. Yeah. You know, I know I was one that took a little bit of time to buy into it. He had the early, I think it was close to 200-yard game, and I thought, yeah, there's no way he'll do it again. And then what do you know? He does it again against the Packers down the stretch last year. But I think that Thielen will probably be the best value play on this offense. And, you know, it's hard to say for sure that a running back will be the value play, just because we don't know if it'll be Murray or Cook or both of them making an impact. So I think I'll go with Thielen for the value play.
I like it. I'm going to go with Rudy, if you don't mind.
Yeah, nothing wrong with Rudy, too. Yep. Listen, I'm sure he'll be, you know, probably have at least 6, if not 10 touchdowns, yeah, and catch 80 passes or so, which is good value, too.
All right, final one, Field. Not from a fantasy perspective, from real football. A Sam Bradford touchdown to interception ratio, given he stays healthy, plays 16 games. What do you expect? Where if it gets to this level, yeah, the Vikings probably won 10 or 11 games and won the division.
I would say something like 24-8, yeah, which is a really good number. Obviously, 3-1 is a good number for any quarterback over the life of his career. In one season, it's good too. And, you know, we talked earlier about, like, the idea that maybe the risk-taking increases this year offensively. If it doesn't, you know, 24-8, I think, is reasonable in that passing offense, given the type of throws that Sam Bradford made. I'd have been saying this, and I know it probably is something that people who have watched him for a long time are tired of hearing, but Sam Bradford's always been one of the most difficult quarterbacks for scouts to evaluate in the time of his NFL career. Because the talent's there, trust me, and I'm sure you see it every day in practice. Like, if you saw him zipping it around in practice, you're going to say to yourself, yeah, I remember why he was the number one overall pick in 2010 in a class that also considered the likes, included the likes of Ndamukong Suh and Gerald McCoy and Eric Berry and Russell Okung and other good players, Earl Thomas, et cetera. But he said, you know, there's been a lack of supporting cast around him in virtually every step of his career. So I think now, maybe on paper, this profiles as the best group he has around him, with the beefed up offensive line and a more experienced receiving group, and just familiarity. I mean, he was traded to the Vikings on what, September 1st last year?
8 days before the season.
Yeah, 8 days before the season. So we talk about rookies making a big leap from, our players making a big leap from year one to year two. Sam Bradford, who's a sharp guy as it is, I think will make a leap himself this year. So I think 24-8 would be a number that, if he has 24 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, the Vikings are right in the mix for 10 to 12 wins.
Awesome. Now, the tie you're wearing, it looks blue, but I think if we adjust the screen the right way, it's got a little purple to it. I like that.
I was going to say, maybe, like, there's got to be, FaceTime needs an Instagram filter
feature.
So, like, you can drop the purple on there. This was totally by coincidence.
I know that.
So I take no credit or fault.
We'll be watching you on ESPN today, and we'll say, yeah, that tie looks purple to me, I think.
That works.
All right. Yeah, thanks a lot, Field. Appreciate your time.
No problem.